Hi, welcome back to the second episode of The Real Politic. In this episode, we discuss the role and validity of political theories in the world of big tech firms and the leaders which occupy this space.
Why do we need to think about big tech and the leaders behind it? Well, today, the most powerful influences, if not more powerful than the government, are big tech companies. And the minds behind them, two of the most contentious leaders in the world, Elon Musk and Jeffrey Bezos, are possibly going to shape the future of our world and humanity as we know it. These leaders continue to amass greater fortunes, and they continue to play an extremely decisive role in policy making, which is why it's necessary for us to actually try and understand their individual personalities and their characteristics and how they are going to impact our future. So we will be looking at two extremely important theories of political leadership, the Machiavellian theory, and we believe that Musk embodies a Machiavellian leader. And on the other hand, we see that Bezos tries to fit into the mold of a charismatic leader as given by Weber.
When looking at Elon Musk, one needs to understand that he plays a critical role in the current society. He occupies a space unlike another tech leader in that he has created a mass following and a niche for his own product, and plays an active role in attempting to shape policy making, and plays an active role in shaping general public opinions. With Musk, it's very interesting to evaluate him as a Machiavellian leader due to the qualities he possesses. Machiavelli is a distinct political theory, as in his view, politics is not about serving the larger good, but it is a self-serving endeavor which politicians take on, with the main goal to be to amass power while creating a facade of being supportive to the larger public, which one can argue is what Musk is doing through his endeavors with Tesla, the Boring Company, and SpaceX. One needs to see that Musk is not a leader which is putting due importance on being loved. He's rather using fear as an mechanism to increase subordination and increase support for his own projects. This fear comes from multiple things. I think when we look at Musk, the first aspect of why he is feared in the current society is because of the knowledge bank he himself has. A very interesting interview of Musk was taken by Joe Rogan, and Joe Rogan is almost seen admiring him and revering him, and for the fact that he has so much knowledge about an issue and about something which most humans do not come into contact with in their daily lives. And because he has knowledge and such a vast understanding of a niche but also dangerous concept like artificial intelligence, he is feared because he has the ability to move and to dictate a field which can be critical for human development in the coming years. And he is using his vast knowledge as a way to gain respect, but more importantly gain fear from the public, as he's seen as a person who has the ability to change humanity's future for the good or for worse.
What's interesting is that Musk doesn't seem to want to abate fears about his leadership style. It seems that he intends to come across as an extremely fierce, almost oppressive leader in a way, and Musk employees have been gone on record to say things like, it's never enough for Musk. There have been incidents where his employees have been reportedly worked for 24 hours a day. What's also interesting is that Musk, unlike Bezos, which we will talk more about at length later, Musk doesn't seem to shy away from putting forth extremely contentious opinions, extremely questionable opinions. It seems that he essentially doesn't really have a filter, and he has also, his words have extreme implications, political and geopolitical. He's not shied away from giving his opinions on political situations, such as the 2019 coup in Bolivia, where he wrote a tweet, where he tweeted something like, we can overthrow whoever we want, something along the lines of that, after a right-wing government overthrew a legitimate government, the legitimate government by Eva Morales. So it's interesting to see how he doesn't seem to put forth this facade. He doesn't seem to cherish and prize his perception for the consumers. He seems to be unapologetically himself, and I think that plays into Machiavelli's idea of it better to be feared than to be loved. because he's not trying to be loved. It's pretty clear that he isn't trying to come across as this lovable leader who has the best interests of the public at heart. He essentially seems to come across as this almost intimidating, eccentric billionaire, and he seems to have like a god complex almost, in which he says and does whatever he wants to. You know, he's gone on, in the past he has been seen smoking marijuana on a talk show. He's done things which could actually garner a lot of public criticism, and unlike Bezos, he doesn't seem to worry about it. He doesn't seem to be wary of a large number of people actually going against him and despising him, because he has almost this cult of personality that surrounds him on the other hand, and because he's so confident in his own knowledge, in his own expertise, and in his own belief in this idea that he thinks only he and a few other elite individuals can accomplish.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, but at the same time, I think there is a certain sense of facade which Musk has put up around himself, which is very similar to Machiavelli's belief that it is not doing good for the public which is important, but it is a perception that you're doing good for the public which is important for a leader. And I think that's very evident when you look at Musk's work, right? Because if we see something like Tesla, it's often projected to be the next evolutionary step in the automobile industry, where it's going to decrease emissions, it decreases stress on humans, etc., etc. Whereas if we see it in the most pure basis, Musk has created a niche for himself where that his product he knows will always be successful because of the fact that he has created this cult following through this facade he's established over the years. And if we talk about even something like The Boring Company, where it, while extremely childish in nature, what he's done with The Boring Company by creating not a flamethrower, which was basically a flamethrower, and he told the public to not buy it. The fact that it made a lot of sales is clearly perceptive of how he's able to establish a facade of where he's trying to do good for the public, whereas at the end goal is always to monetize sales. Being a capitalist in his own essence and being the leader of one of the biggest tech firms currently, while Musk attempts to, on paper, solve the issue of traffic in Los Angeles, carbon emissions, moving the world to a safer place, we can see that his actions are very self-centric in nature, as that his main goal still remains to be A, an important leader, and B, to create, to monetize his ideas, and which he does really well. Again, going back to the idea of The Boring Company, he takes mundane ideas and he creates products which may not be very serving to the public, but can establish himself in the market and make sure that he has multiple streams of revenue. And I think this fake facade is seen none better in his treatment of his own workers. While Musk is often revered as this as a person who's going to lead humanity to a greater direction, the way he treats his own employees has been criticized multiple times, as he has been seen screaming at top executives and acting in a very self-centered and capitalist, if you would say, manner, in that he's always focused on the main goal, which is increasing his own monetizable wealth and creating and increasing the company's control over the market.
So we discussed how Musk embodies a Machiavellian leader, and he doesn't seem to want to create a positive perception of him for the larger public. As opposed to that, we see that Bezos seems to try to echo the characteristics of the charismatic leader, according to the idea that Weber put forth. So let's begin our discussion of Bezos by looking at a statement he put out in the second shareholder letter that he wrote for Amazon in 1998. So in this letter he wrote, and I quote, "We hold as axiomatic that customers are perceptive and smart, and that brand image follows reality and not the other way around. This is important for a number of reasons. Firstly, a lot of scholars over the years and several people believe that this statement is an allusion to none other than the US Declaration of Independence, which says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So this is a statement in the Declaration of Independence, and if we look at Bezos' statement, we see that the flow of it, the grand eloquence of it, sort of echoes the statement. Firstly, what the statement says, that customers are perceptive and smart, and that brand image follows reality. This is entirely in contrast to Musk's idea, or rather Musk's behavior, which doesn't seem to put his customers first. You know, he knows that he has a niche consumer base, and in line with that, he doesn't need to put forth this image of himself as being extremely lovable and an extremely wanted leader. On the other hand, we see that Bezos has this idea of him being someone who is appealing to the masses in general, and we see that this is obviously in relation to the fact that he caters to a much larger consumer base. Then the fact that he says that brand image follows reality, this statement is extremely significant, because he seemed to be implying that you know, his image for the brand that he puts forth of himself being an extremely a people-pleasing leader, someone who cares about the masses, someone who cares about the customers, is the reality and the truth of his brand. Now, let's talk about Bezos as a charismatic leader. And we see that Bezos strives to be a charismatic leader. So we can refer to Weber's idea of a charismatic leader, a leader who almost has certain qualities that are greater than that of the average human. The idea, the word charismatic was actually taken from Weber from some obscure theological reference, and it referred to certain qualities which were almost godlike, which humans couldn't embody. And the charismatic leader has knowledge, has appeal, and is almost revolutionary in a way. And we see that it's interesting, because we see that this fits Bezos's idea of himself very well. He seems to think of himself, or he seems to portray himself as this leader who is actually working for the betterment of humanity, he has some revolutionary ideas that he thinks will transform human life as we know it. At the same time, what's interesting is that he knows that as a charismatic leader, his leadership and his position depends on people's idea of him, people's perception of him, and how much they accept him. As we know, a charismatic leader doesn't require traditional authority, doesn't require legitimacy which is legal or rational. Their legitimacy stems from people's acceptance of them. And so we see that even though he's had these ideas which are extremely almost deplorable in a way, that people have expressed a lot of dissatisfaction with them, he has taken note of that. And unlike Musk, who doesn't seem to actually care about what people think of his strange ideas, and he goes and puts them forth irrespective, we see that Bezos knows the fine line between what he can and can't do, and he seems to continue to do that. So a great example of this would be that of the human transport device. So in 2016, Amazon was granted a patent for a human transport device. So the drawings that accompany the patent document depict a cage, and the Guardian literally describes this device as a cage, which is just large enough to contain one worker. The cage is mounted on a set of robotically controlled wheels and features a long robotic arm with which the worker can carry out stock picking tasks. The intention of this was essentially to allow workers to enter into areas which could otherwise be inhabited only by machines. So it is literally making a human being, it is literally making the worker almost act as a robotic machine, and kind of attaching it to one. And this patent was not brought to public attention for a long time, for almost 2 years after it was granted, until two academics, namely Kate Crawford and Vlad Anjola, discovered it, and they wrote about it extensively as a part of a research project. And when this came to light, there was extreme outrage from people, and people expressed their dissatisfaction with it, and public reaction was one of horror. And the company acknowledged the whole thing as a terrible idea. So we see that the reaction of the company here is extremely crucial. So instead of going ahead with their idea, instead of continuing to espouse their faith in the idea, they accept that it's a terrible one, and they sort of try to condemn the idea to obscurity and make the public forget about it. So this is interesting, because here we see that as opposed to a leader like Musk, there is an extremely different, like a sort of nuanced approach that Bezos has, where he will subtly try and continue to create this favorable perception of him when his ideas have been condemned greatly. In this particular case, he realizes that it could cost him his position, and it could cost him the perception of him as a charismatic leader, and he puts these ideas to the side.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting when we look at the dichotomy between Bezos and Musk, in that one creates is a Machiavellian leader, whereas the other is a charismatic leader, or at least attempts to be a charismatic leader, which was founded by Weber. While at the end of the day, their goal remains the same. Their goal is to amass wealth and personal fortune. And while they both take completely different leadership methods to it, I think the main reason, as you pointed out, was because they try to serve different audiences. Musk, over the years, has almost created a cult-like personality, and it was nonetheless more evident in when he launched the Cybertruck, which clearly failed on the first attempt, as the window broke when he threw a steel ball. And why this was important was because one of the key components of the Cybertruck was supposed to be that it has bulletproof windows. And the fact that the window broke during the first public testing, and still he was able to get so many people to pitch in funds by the pre-order for the Cybertruck, which would, I believe, still take 2 years post the pre-order timeline to actually be shipped. This shows that his cult of personality is that people almost respect him out of the fear, as we talked before, because his ideas are so grandiose in nature and so futuristic in nature that people have almost a blind faith where he's going to lead them to the future, and they're ready to fund this blind faith. And that ability to make people perceive that he is the future is what has allowed him to monetize. Whereas for Jeff Bezos, it's been very difficult. When looking at his main company, which is Amazon, and how they started as a product which has to be very appeasing and very adaptable to customer needs, because they serve everyday consumers who have multiple other alternatives except Amazon to buy their product from. And the fact that he has to take a Weberian approach to his leadership, it is clearly reflective of the fact that he requires the public to believe that he needs to be loved and he's a positive leader, because he's in a industry and in a field which is more competitive, while compared to Musk, who has taken such a leadership role in the automobile industry that he's almost become untouchable to a certain degree, and that he does not need to care about what the public will think, because he knows he has a certain group of followers who will always support him. Which is very interesting, because if we look at how leaders are able to get to power, there's a theory of the key to powers. And while this theory to key to powers says that you need to maximize the amount of key to powers essentially refers to important groups or individuals who will ensure a leader is able to be in charge for a longer time. We have seen this play out in many political scenarios, but now we're seeing this being played out in the capitalist tech industry, because of the fact that for Musk, the key to powers are small and niche in nature. It's because his products are luxury goods where every individual is paying such a high amount, he does not need to appease to many individuals in order to be profitable and to sell enough product for him to keep his company surviving and grow. Whereas for Musk, therefore, his key to powers being limited gives him a certain sense of he has more freedom in terms of expression, as he does not need to appease the mass audiences. Whereas for Jeffrey Bezos, on the other hand, the key to powers are more large because of the fact that he's in such a competitive environment where there are alternatives to his product readily available, and that the fact that his product is based to fulfill the needs of daily consumers who, unlike the cult of personality and the devoted followers of Musk, do not have any particular allegiance to Amazon. Thus, for him, his perception becomes more important, because as Weber had said himself, that charisma is another way to make yourself a legitimate leader. Thus, for him, he is using charisma as not only to legitimize himself as a tech leader, but also to legitimize his company to be the leader in the industry he is in. And because of the fact that he is attempting to be charismatic, we can see that it is because of the fact that, as mentioned before, he's trying to appease a larger base. And therefore, we can see that the dichotomy between how Musk and Bezos are as leaders in their own respective fields comes from the fact that they both have different keys to power, and therefore they have different requirements in order to keep themselves, not only their companies afloat, but themselves as continuous leaders in the field, because at the end of the day, their main goal remains to amass wealth, and they've just taken two very different paths where they look at different audiences and look at them from a different method. That is why we see such a difference in how each of them interprets their power and how each of them interacts with the audiences and with their own consumers.
It's really interesting that you brought up the key to power here, because so when we look at something that's common between both Bezos and Musk, we see that they have this idea of a future, the future for the human race being in outer space. And every year, Bezos liquidates $1 billion worth of his own Amazon stock, and he puts it into a company he founded in 2000 called Blue Origin, which develops technologies which are supposed to facilitate travel to space and the settlement of man-made colonies in outer space. And how this ties into the key to power idea is that while Bezos, once again, in line with, you know, his previous behavior, which tries to show him as working for the betterment of humanity and for and try to create a favorable perception of himself, once again he says it. He's gone on to say that one of the reasons why he would like to do this is because in the future, in a world of finite resources, the human race can only survive in outer space, and we need to learn to exploit the resources of outer space, or else we will have to ration the few resources that we have here. What's interesting is that while he says this, he does not see the how revealing his statement is, because he says that the future of the earth would be one where rationing would be necessary, where we would have to use the few resources that we have carefully. And instead of actually creating a world where that is possible, or instead of changing his behaviors and the behaviors of his company in alignment of that sustainable development goal, he would rather actually restructure the very way, the very existence that we have, by taking us to space. And we see that once again, this whole vision that he has allows a company like Amazon to function more. Because in a world where rationing exists, of course, excessive consumerism, this kind of capitalist structure that he's created could not exist. And the only way it could actually exist is if we continued with this idea that he has, and we actually went ahead and resettled or colonized outer space and exploited the resources that we could get from that. And we see that even though, you know, once again, this actually continues the previous behavior patterns that we talked about, where he has this idea of him, he has this idea which portrays him as almost a revolutionary leader. He wants to be the person who creates the infrastructure that allows us to colonize space. He wants to be the one who is almost the foundation, the bedrock of resettlement efforts of humanity. But at the same time, he masks it as an endeavor for the betterment of human race and allowing us to actually have unlimited consumption, allowing us to have a better life. And what's extremely revealing about the previous statement is that while doing all of this, he shows how it actually plays into him sustaining his power.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I think Musk is also trying to do this in a very different vertical. I think when we look at Musk and his role in AI, Musk has been one of the first people to go to the US Congress and lobbying for regulation over AI and to make sure that AI does not become a threat to humanity, as many science fiction movies have portrayed. It's quite interesting to look at it that way, because while Bezos uses space as a way for him to become a leader in an upcoming field, Musk is using AI to do the same, in that they both have created their own fields and their own industries almost to become leaders of. With Jeffrey Bezos, it's space travel and colonization of space, where he almost becomes a de facto leader because he's the one who's starting it. And similarly for Elon Musk, he's becoming a de facto leader of AI policy making because he's the one who's come up with the notion of how AI can help us in the day-to-day life. Especially when we see recently with how Tesla has almost has I think filed a patent or has released plans for a humanoid-esque robot, which will be the next step in AI and AI taking over human jobs. I think it's very interesting that these two people are positioning themselves as leaders, which all in their own fields of space and AI, because in a way we see that due to the fact that currently we live in a world where big tech has this ability of working on things which are not even comprehensible to the normal mind. Even politicians are taking a backseat and letting them take leadership because they believe that they don't have the nuanced knowledge or the ability to actually create policies over these. And therefore, by almost being ahead of their times, Elon Musk and Bezos have established themselves as de facto leaders of our future because of the fact that they have this knowledge bank which most other people will never come into understanding of, and their knowledge bank is what allows them to make themselves as distinct leaders and make themselves as future policy makers. But at the same time, this remains a double-edged sword, because if we do allow them to be policy makers purely on their merit of knowledge rather than their public perception or making them go through the same process as normal politicians, we're almost threatened by that. Because if we, as we have seen in the past, that they're both at the end of the day very self-centered and self-serving capitalists, while using different models of Musk using the Machiavellian model versus Weber using versus Jeffrey Bezos using the Weberian model. The commonality between both these models is that they aim not to help the public but to keep power. So we clearly see that both Musk and Bezos are very centered upon being powerful leaders of the world and not really always centered around what is best for humanity, which while many politicians failing to do so, they are under the belief and they have the prerequisite that the work they're doing should be for the betterment of our future. And because these people because Musk and Bezos, due to their big tech endeavors, are being de facto public policy makers, we are threatened by the fact that will they be making policies which will actually help humans, or will they be making policies which help them? So I think that is a big threat which the world currently faces, in that we do not know that what the long-term intentions of big tech leaders will be, and will they come out as any other politician or politicians who've been successful in the history by serving public good, or will they turn out to be corrupt individuals who only trying to amass their own wealth and are very self-serving and self-interested
I
in
think
nature?
that's a great way for us to actually go into a conclusion where we would like to pose certain questions to you and leave you with a few thoughts. Firstly, the first one being, do we live in a technocracy now? And which means that do these leaders, these technological leaders, have greater power than our governments? And I think that's something we can wonder about. Several would agree and say that yes, their decisions today have a more profound impact on our world and on our future than that of our conventional political leaders. Secondly, we have to think about what are the implications of an AI-driven world? Where is the place for morality? Where is the place for ethics in a world where AI is integrated into almost every facet of our lives? And we have a lot to think about. Because of what's been happening and because of the wealth and the power that these leaders have amassed, I think it's important to try and be critical of their actions and to try and actually analyze the way they're behaving, because it has dire implications for our world. as we know, we must question the feasibility of their ideas. We must ask ourselves, as was already said, who are they doing this for? Is their vision of a different future, is their vision of off-world colonies located close to Earth even feasible? And are they actually endangering our world by, instead of investing in the world as it is, trying to create a different world, are they endangering the very future of our race by doing this? I think we have a lot to look into and a lot to wonder about, and we have to keep scrutinizing these leaders and their actions carefully, and we have to continue to strive to understand the way they think, because these are the people who are essentially creating or attempting to create a new world order, and they are the ones behind a shifting power dynamic or an already shifted power dynamic.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting to leave this as a lasting thought, is that while we not only have to assess the intentions and the goals of these leaders in the tech firm, we also have to assess the product itself, especially when we look at policy making and AI, which I think you alluded to. It is a growing field, and we see that a lot of modern politicians are actually very data driven rather than old political theories who were building on philosophies laid down by their successors. It's very interesting that this drive and this movement towards data-driven policy making, where do we strike the balance between rationality, which is what data-driven politics would policy making will be based on, because it does not look at individuals, it rather looks at it as a collective and takes the most rational and the most, maybe what you would argue as the scientifically efficient method, whereas that may not always be the most humanly conscious or the most moral method. So I think then there's a fine line where we as future public policy students and people in general need to keep in mind that while AI presents possibility, also presents threat of losing what current human consciousness and current human morality is. And with Jeff Bezos and Musk, their work will continue to threaten and to question what we as humans perceive as rational, what we as human perceives as morally conscious, and what we as human collectively perceive our future should be. And that is because over years they've established themselves as such big leaders that they transcend current politics and they hold the key almost to the future of the world. And thus the scrutiny which is held on them needs to be up to par with what modern politicians go through, because they, at the end of the day, I think as Naisha has also said, remain arguably more influential in the future technocracy which we might be heading towards. And I think that is a lasting thought which we should be left with, is that the future lays in the hands of big tech firms, and a collective decision needs to be made to the amount of control which will be given to them in our world. And I think that pretty much wraps up the second episode of The Real Politic, which was presented by me, Prebin Gupta, and Naisha. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.